You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
So we're kind of continuing on our movies from video games and jungles theme. So we're going to talk about a little movie called Tomb Raider.
Yeah, which I mean, obviously, you know, as a young adolescent boy and, you know, playing my PlayStation 1, you know, the assets that came with playing Tomb Raider were a childhood delight. So why not, you know, have Lara Croft in, you know, a real movie and, you know, have it played none other than Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, in her prime, too.
Yeah.
but before that, what are we smoking this week?
So this week, shit's just got absolutely crazy. So, you know, we are smoking JFR's Lunatic.
From Casa Fernandez.
Yeah, this, I don't really know how to describe it. I mean, this thing is
I'm big as shit, bro, cigar.
Yeah, like 4.7, you know, as far as inches, but this thing is a full 70 ring gauge. Like,
yeah, this is the El Chiquito Vitola, which... It's even more saying is there's a bigger version. The regular Lunatic is an 8x80.
Like, I mean, you know, I get the appeal of a 6x60. I mean, you know, it's got a little bit more of a natural mouthfeel. This does not.
To put it in perspective, if you're not familiar with ring gauges, a 70 ring gauge is an inch diameter. So an 80 is, like, bigger than an inch.
That's probably, what, an inch and a half? Probably, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it's big as shit, bro.
Maybe like an inch and 7/8. I don't know. But, off the bat. So this thing is going to support a San Andreas wrapper with Nicaragua binder and filler. It's kind of weird. I mean, you know, there's a little bit of spice, a little pepper, but like the flavor hits you and then it dissipates. Like it doesn't necessarily linger. Like if there's anything that lingers, it's almost a coffee like flavor or something. I don't know. This is kind of a trip. I almost want to go outside and, you know, throw on Pink Floyd's Lunatic and, you know, set the cigar on the grass so that way we can have the Lunatic is on the grass, you know?
The lunatic is in the ashtray.
Which it barely fits.
Yes. It's so big it barely fits in the cigar notches of our ashtray. And it's, you know, it's medium to full bodied with, you know, flavors including spice, pepper, earth, coffee, chocolate, and leather. But yeah, it's like when you take a puff, that flavor hits you, but then it just kind of fades out as quickly as it came.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Very slow burning, too, for such a fat bastard. If we had the 8-incher, we'd be here all night.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, that was one of the things that I talked about, you know, when we were buying the cigar is, you know, we've smoked... I think the closest equivalent and size that a lot of folks are going to recognize is probably the nub cigars. You know, they tend to be stubby with, you know, a little bit more... of a larger ring gauge. And, you know, you look at those cigars and you're like, man, that thing's only going to take me, you know, 30 minutes. No, that turns into like an hour and a half of smoke. Like,
yeah.
So,
it's,
I mean,
short, but it's slow burn.
But I've never tried this cigar before. I am excited to continue smoking it. The construction is just flawless. I mean, the only struggle is finding a cutter big enough to, you know.
Yeah, because I've got one of the you know, big XO cutters, and that was even almost like pushing it.
that's the this cigar is the perfect size for that cutter.
Yeah,
you know, which I thought that was the cutter to end all cutters. You may need to look at upgrading if this, you know, continues to trend.
Yeah, it's definitely. Although,
you know,
I
do gotta say, like, this does not have a natural mouthfeel, so that alone is kind of tripping me up. You know, I'm used to taking a puff, sitting with a cigar in my mouth for a little bit, and you just can't do that with this one.
Yeah, because one of those hangs your mouth, your jaw's gonna start to hurt because it's like you're just in there with your mouth open.
I don't know. You know, I mean. If next time I go to a dentist, you know, I mean, they may use one of these. All right, we need to take a look at your teeth here, you know, open wide and insert the cigar and it'll make a nice pry.
Well, you've seen those, like, the games people play in the challenge of, like, putting the dental mouth spreader in your mouth and trying to talk. You can do that with this cigar.
Yeah, pretty much.
We start our own you know, internet challenge. but, you know, if you're going to be like Laura Croft and going to the deepest, darkest jungles to find, you know, artifacts and whatnot, and run into weird terrorist Illuminati Trinity groups, call on the Strike Force. StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use your promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your order, and they ship everywhere. So if you're stranded on a weird Japanese island, like freaking Navy SEALs will parachute in with your freaking Strike Force order. It's like no matter where you're at, they will get you your shit, and you'll be all caffeinated like me. So with that, without further ado, let's head to the jungle. Don't count me out, just 'cause I'm down. Boy, I've been down before. Fate has a way of playing games, and I've been keeping score. They tried to tell me I was lost in the forest like a cub with no mother. Welcome back. It's time to talk about Tomb Raider and the three movies that spawned from from that game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, which, I mean, that was probably one of the first video games, you know, that just really sucked me in. I mean, you know, I could remember rocking that on PlayStation, you know, at the time, like, you know, I mean, that was a groundbreaking graphics engine. You know, that was one of the few, you know, like, truly female-led, you know, hardcore, badass, you know, action genre games.
Yeah, because not only was it, like, a, you know, just, you know, good action, you know, just unlimited ammo, shoot the hell out of everything game, but then it was also, like, complex freaking puzzles to solve. I mean, it really was like a, I don't know, like an Indiana Jones-esque adventure, but with, you know, a badass girl with, like, twin H&Ks. Yeah.
And other twins and such that you might could have zoomed in on.
Oh, yeah.
It was a weird time before the internet. Most folks just would not understand. Most of the guys listening to the podcast are like, yeah, we're guilty. And it's sad but true.
Yeah, yeah. All the, you know, preteen, like, video game nerds, you know, Lara Croft was their first crush. You know, trying to, you know, move the camera just right so you can look at her butt during an action sequence. I mean, how many guys hit puberty playing Tomb Raider?
Probably more than's willing to admit it.
And, you know, like I said, as popular as the game was, you know, we got 2001 was the, and this was in a time when video game movies kind of sucked. And people, like, it was kind of a guarantee that video game movies are going to be bad, you know, aka the Super Mario movie, Doom. Yeah. Like, you know, there was some attempts and failures, but, you know, the first, you know, when Lara Croft Tomb Raider, directed by Simon West, starring Angelina Jolie as Laura Croft, and she was the embodiment of the character of Laura Croft. I mean, the accent and everything, and I mean, even like the physicality of the action sequences and shit. And you know, at the time, the movie itself, you know, while successful, was kind of critically, you know, there was, you know,
yeah, it wasn't exactly groundbreaking.
When you look at the reviews of it, everyone who's like, you know, thinks, you know, the movie's like, you know, derivative and just like paint by number shit, they all said, but Angelina Jolie as Laura Croft is freaking awesome. It's like everyone agreed that, like, even if the movie's not like the greatest thing ever, her portrayal of the character is like fucking spot on. Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, it was almost like, you know, she was picked from the video game and put on the big screen. Like, I mean, like, you know, as we talk about the new film, like, that was one of my concerns is, you know, I mean, you know, in my head, you know, still Angelina is, you know, Lara Croft. And, you know, yeah. It was, you know, I got to say, I was a little bit iffy about her not, you know, being in the new film and stuff. But, yeah.
We'll talk about it when we get to that one. But Alicia Vikander or whatever, whoever the new girl playing Laura Croft, she's pretty much as Angelina was to OG Laura Croft. She's pretty dead on for the new, like, rebooted video game Laura Croft.
And see, like, I mean, I'm guilty because I maybe have played 30 minutes of, you know, one of the Tomb Raider games. And it may not even be the most recent. It was, you know, when PS4 was given away. I think it was the download for Plus or something. And, you know, I was like, oh, I'll give it a try. And, you know, I messed around with it for a little bit and... You know, it was just one of those that I'm like, oh, crap, this is going to be a time suck, and I just don't have, you know, that to dedicate to this.
Yeah, so. Like the open world roaming of that game. But, yeah, I think they made two of those of the new Lara Croft.
Yes.
But, yeah, she looks like, especially once she gets to the island, it's pretty much like the costume. It looks exactly like the damn game. But yeah.
It was almost too realistic, man. I don't know.
Yeah, but the first movie... made for $115 million, made $274. But yeah, it's, you know, from the numbers, it was a successful movie.
Well, I mean, it was the highest grossing film, you know, on its opening weekend. I mean, which I don't really know, you know, what other films, you know, were on the map, you know. I mean, I can't remember from back then. Gosh. Dude, that was 17 years ago. Like, Tomb Raider is almost 20 years old. You want to feel old? Now you feel old. Like,
oh, yeah, 18 years ago. Shit.
Gosh.
And the movie just started, I mean, anyone who's like, yeah, hardcore video game, like, loves a good action sequence. And this movie just jumped right into it where you see her, like, you know, messing around what looks like some Egyptian temple. And all of a sudden... the fucking Terminator shows up. She has to fight a giant robot. Yes. Which I don't know what had anything to do with Tomb Raider. I don't remember fighting, you know, T-Rexes and whatnot. But, yeah, I don't remember fighting a robot.
You always had, you know, the different spirits. But you're right. You know, most of Tomb Raider was, you know, the puzzles. I mean, you know, and I don't know. It was almost like a you know... modern-day Castlevania-esque, you know. I mean, great action, great puzzle solving. Like, I mean, it just brought things full circle. And, you know, I mean, that was at a time that, you know, Resident Evil 2, you know, was big on the map and everything. And I don't know, man. It was just freaking awesome. And the movie, you know, even going back and rewatching it nearly two decades later. God. Where's the time gone? But I mean, it still felt fresh. Like, you know, at that time, it's exactly what I wanted from Tomb Raider. I don't care about, you know, a long drawn out backstory or anything. I want to see Lara Croft raiding some fucking tombs.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and how do you like, you know, in the game, it's always just like, I don't even know if there was like ammo in like this, you just shot the piss out of everything. But I did like how they, as a gun guy, you know, it annoys me when they have the magical magazine that never has to be reloaded. But I did like how they added the little quick reload, you know, ammo like carrier she had, where she just kind of like hit them to the belts and they automatically popped off.
Yes,
and, Like, I've seen that in some of the you know, open class competition shooting. That I was like, that was just kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know, man. Like, I just love the shit out of this
film. And the freaking compensated H&Ks, like, just like in the game.
Are those ghost guns? I'm surprised, like, especially with the modern film, that they didn't, like, blur them out or something. Like, oh, we can't show these on the big screen. Ah, gosh.
Oh. Yeah, we'll get. That's probably one of my favorite segments of the new movie. this one jumps right in, almost like the game did, where they already established, you know, Lara Croft, who is skilled and you know, fluent in language and
combat and
all these things. Like, it's like, we don't need an origin story. Let's just get to the fucking tomb raiding.
Like, this is almost like the Bruce Lee of Indiana Jones. Like, in a female. Like, I mean, because, you know, I mean, I can remember talking about the action sequences and everything else. Like, the only other film, you know, that was talked about in that same light was maybe The Matrix. Like,
The damn werewolf vampire movie.
God, don't. Not Twilight. No, it's. And that shall be stricken from the record. No, you're talking on Underworld.
Yes, Underworld. It's like the action kind of similar in that just over the top shit. But, you know, and this one picked up with, you know, her been, whatever, 5 years or how many years since her. Or 15, I forget how many years it was, but her father had disappeared on a quest, played by her own father, John Voight, as Lord Richard Croft. And, you know, on the anniversary of his death, you know, she ends up finding this weird clock hidden in the walls that is, you know, glowing and counting down to something. So she takes it to a art expert to find out what it is. And they're like, bro, we don't know what the fuck this is. Yeah. But that was linked to, it was like, because it's been so long since I played the games, like, her two movies had a whole lot of, like, mystical shit to it.
Well, that was, you know, such a great fit, you know, when you talk about the Illuminati and all of the, you know, freaking, conspiracies that surround the Illuminati and the, you know, all of these, you know, underworlds are, you know, the Illuminati is, you know, a dimension like into another realm and, you know, everything. Yeah. I mean, you know, I can't help but, you know, just see the little triangle on, you know, the dollar bills and stuff and be like, Illuminati confirmed. Like, it's coming to whisk me away.
Yeah. In this one, the bad guys are the Illuminati, led by Ian Glenn as Manfred Powell, and his, you know, not necessarily evil, but he was just kind of like a mercenary Tomb Raider, Daniel Craig, Alex West. It was like, I don't really care that y'all are evil, but as long as y'all are paying the checks, I'll help you find the all-seeing eye, which once it's reunited, can give you control of time and space, and yeah, you don't want bad guys having time travel. You know, that'll fuck up some shit.
Oh yeah. I don't, almost feels like Doctor Who in a sense. Like, no, you cannot have my screwdriver.
But like when they, I did like the sequence when, you know, she takes the clock, which is kind of the master key to, like, they had to do this thing during an alignment of the planets that happens every 5,000 years and during a eclipse to be able to find this thing. You know, she takes it to the watch expert and he kind of rats her out to the Illuminati. So they show up, you know, and try to raid her house in the middle of the night, and she just goes like freaking, like, she's like the practicing with like the bungee cord flip things and then gets a whole, like, and that was like serious, like, Matrix shit. Yes. Bouncing around beating people's asses. But, like, the next day, like, you know, because she fights him off, but they end up taking the clock. Well, then a letter that her father had sent, you know, to arrive on the day this thing was supposed to Start arrives, and the UPS guy comes in, and the house is just all shot to shit, and like her her freaking butler and her tech guy is like cleaning up the house, and he's just like, what the hell? And she's like, you know, last night I woke up and I just hated everything and wanted to start over. And he's like, okay, whatever. Rich people, man, fucking sounds reasonable.
Yeah, you know, at that point almost anything is believable. But yeah, that's
and I do like, because, you know, they never really explain where she got her skills, but at one point when she finds out she must go on this quest and she has to, there's like a timetable, like, how are you going to get, because the first piece is in Cambodia, like, how are you going to get there in like 16 hours or whatever? She's like, I got to call in a favor. And I'm like, what kind of favor? I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you. And then you see like a picture of her with like freaking Black Ops, like British SAS guys, like, yeah, so apparently either officially or unofficially, she had some training back in the day. And yeah, gets airdropped by the special forces into the middle of the jungle with a pimped out fucking Land Cruiser or whatever.
Yes, yeah. I idolized that vehicle. I was like, I need one of those.
Hell yeah. But then that first temple sequence when they get in, and very much like the game, having to solve these little riddles and puzzles and, you know, to unlock this. It's like she kind of has to team up with the bad guys because they've got the piece she needs and she has information they need. So one of those, like, she's like,
we're going to force you into co-op.
Yeah. I just like, she's like, because they're trying to put the key in the wrong space. She's like, no, it's the wrong space. You got to put it up here. She's like, well, why should I believe you? Because I need you to get the piece so I can steal it from you later. If you don't get the piece, neither one of us is going to get it. So, like, I might as well help you.
Three hidden keys open three secret gates.
That's next week's movie. But yeah, and then the bringing to life of the robot sword wielding monkeys and the four armed, you know, whatever, Shiva statue. I mean, that's like some straight out of the game shit.
Oh yeah, that was, you know, Shiva at Mortal Kombat. But yes, I mean, you know, that to me is when I was like, all right, you know, shit just got real. Like, I mean,
we're like, oh, we're having a boss battle now when the big fucker stands up and starts pulling out the giant swords. And
well, like, it's like, you know, the opening was like the mini boss, you know.
So. Yeah. You fight through the little guys and like, oh no, now we have to. And I like, because she's like just shooting it in the face. But it's got like multiple faces. She basically blows one face completely off and it just like turns to a new face and smiles at her. And it's like, oh, fuck. Is there a med pack around here?
Yeah, what? You know, I was trying to remember, you know, a lot of the game mechanics, because it's been so long since I played. Like, was it med packs you collected, or did they have, like, you know, the freaking, like, stem shots or something? I don't know.
I can't remember. You know, every game, when you're walking down a hallway and you haven't seen anybody for a while, and all of a sudden you see a couple med packs, you're like, oh, fuck. Yeah. There's something big around the next corner. Here's a stockpile of ammo and health. I'm about to be in some shit.
That's when you're like, all right, you know, I mean, I need to pause, make sure I'm fed, make sure I've peed, and, you know, I gotta get ready to commit, because, you know, it's about to be on, like, Donkey Kong.
And those kind of robot Donkey Kongs.
Yes. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know, it was interesting, you know, the, like, faux aspect of things and some of the characters, because I you know, that was kind of one of the cool things, is always that underlying supernatural element, and on top of that, just the sheer, like, puzzles and, you know, the knowledge needed to crack to survive. And it's like, you know, if you did escape the boss or make it through, well, you know, the level's there to fuck you.
He's like, yeah, I got the thing. Oh, now I got to get out. Because the whole place is going to, like,
it's going to start collapsing. But as I'm running through, like, you know, I'm going to get hit with poison arrows and everything else. Like,
yeah, pretty much. But, you know, then they have to, you know, she escapes with a piece, but they still have the clock. So they have to team up yet again to get the second piece, which is in the middle of, because apparently the thing was made from some kind of meteor that struck, and they built this big city inside of a crater. But when someone misused the object, it destroyed the city. So that they had to go to the crater to find the other piece, and it was, you know, in this weird steampunk freaking, like, where the first one was like traditional, you know, African jungle, you know, Asian jungle, like, you know, temple. This one was like very, like, you know, mechanical, steampunky,
very very alchemist like.
Yeah,
you know, that's kind
of with
what,
like,
I
this
thought.
Giant rotating, like, model of the universe and stuff that was pretty cool.
And it's like if you, like, could you just imagine, like, you're exploring, like, some cave or something, come across something like you just see it and it's like, yeah, I probably shouldn't touch that, like. But no, what happens? No, we must touch it.
Yeah, everybody climb the spinning freaking galaxy thing, and half of them get crushed, except for her. And then, you know, of course, you know, to force her to show them how to complete it, they stab old Daniel Craig before he was Bond and throw him in the water and be like, hey, you want to save him? You know, like any video game, you got to have that reset point to, like, like Prince of Persia or whatever, where you can, like, rewind time. It's like, you know, the only way to save him now is to put together the Doomsday device so I can steal it from you. But she ends up, like, yeah, kicking ass and reversing time and flipping the dude's knife on him. But then I do, like, you know, the place is all coming apart and, you know, he's on the ground, you know, ready to die. And he had tried to convince her, like, you should join us because your father was Illuminati. And he finds out that, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, your father was Illuminati, but, you know, once he found out we were evil, he tried to betray us, and I killed him. And, oh, yeah, I got his pocket watch here, too, bitch. And she's like, I was going to walk away, but now I got to kill this motherfucker. and that sequence, too, was a pretty badass. I mean, just freaking ridge hand to the throat. And, like,
yes.
And then you get the sweet, like, barefoot skiing behind dogs through a collapsing tunnel, which, yeah. That's one of the things I always hate in those video games, too, where it's like, oh, no, you got the giant ball or the time zones where it's like you got to outrun shit and make every single jump or the freaking walls are going to collapse on you. Those, like, always, like, freaking fucked me up. It always took me, like, two or three times to get through one of those levels.
I think the worst for me is, like, the levels where, like, stuff collapses under you. And it's like, oh, well, I like, it kind of sucks. Like, you know, I remember playing video, and there was always a pattern, right? So, I mean, you know, eventually, like you said, it may take you a few times, but you would, you know, you would figure out the timing or the pattern or something like that. And, you know, that's kind of a mechanic that, you know, video games did away with. Like, you get too much assistance these days.
Yeah, back in the when you only had 3 lives and no save points. Now it's like, get off my lawn, kids.
Oh, you think this game's difficult? Well, here's no memory cards, no save points,
no hints. Oh, but then you had the when she makes it back, you know, she saved the world, and you know they tried to get her, you know, like, her butler's like, here, you should put on a dress, and she's like, all proper ladies should, you know, wear a dress, and she's like, yeah, proper ladies should, and then she shows up wearing it like she's like, you know, go say goodbye to her father. She's kind of completed and figure out what happened to him. He wasn't just disappeared. So she puts on a dress to go visit his grave, and they're all like, the fuck? And she's like, shut up. Don't say anything. And when they come back, they're like, her two little employees are standing there, and like the tech guy like takes a picture of it. And then it's like, I fixed the robot. and the butler guy's got her like guns on a silver platter, and it's like, all right, let's rock and roll. I was like, I want a butler someday to bring me my gun, yeah. It's going to leave for the day, and like Jeeves is like, here's your Glock, sir. Have a good day. Fuck ISIS.
Can I have two?
Here you go. Go forth and wish a motherfucker would. And they did it again in like 2003. Lara Croft Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life. Directed by John DeBont, which, you know, still a success, but didn't make as much money as the first one did. This one, or the first one was, I think, $95 million, made 156. This one was, oh yeah, the last one was like 156, made 275. This one was 95, only made 156, which is still successful, but, you know, wasn't as successful in the last. And they had planned for a third movie, but you know, Angelina was like, "Nah, I'm not coming back again." So they kind of shut that down for a while until this you know most recent reboot. But yeah, I'd like to see if they gave it another shot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I don't know, Cradle of Life wasn't. I mean, it wasn't terrible. Like it, you know. I don't know. It you know had almost like that Latin flair to it, you know. And you know, this one was just a little different, you know. I mean,
this one was almost James Bondian.
Yeah, like I don't know. You know, I mean, the other one was, you know, so witty and everything, and this one here, like you said, kind of felt very Bond-esque, I guess.
Yeah, because, I mean, it starts off with her, like, scuba diving in some kind of underwater temple. And, you know, and also kind of like Bond, starts off with, like, you know, that pre-credit action sequence, you know. It's like, she's in a looking for some kind of glowing orb in an underground, you know, underwater thing. But then these criminals show up and kill her partners and take the orb. And yeah, Chin Lo, played by Simon Yam, it was like very much like, you know, Legend of Zelda underwater temple.
But I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, when you're talking MI6 and everything, of course it's going to feel very James Bond-esque.
Yeah, because, like, you know, MI6 shows up and like, oh yeah, that thing that you had was actually a key to find Pandora's box. And, you know, as, you know, they talk about in later movie, that even most myths and legends have some kind of basis in reality. And to them is like, you know, they say that this Pandora's box actually, instead of like, you know, if you're not familiar with the legend of Pandora's box, you know, it was this box that Pandora had. And when she opened it, it released, you know, fucking fear and all the plagues against the earth. But she closed just in time to leave hope inside. And, you know, that's how the earth maintains hope, is because it didn't escape the box. Well, in this version, what's in the box is a deadly plague that, you know, some, you know, bioterrorist is wanting to unleash upon the super plague that has no cure. It's supposedly hidden in this box, wherever the fuck it's at. And the shiny orb is the key to finding the the plague of Pandora's box.
Yeah. By the way, if you see a box floating in a puddle of acid, probably don't want to mess with that.
Black acid, too, which made it even more metal.
Whoa, it's a new band name. Black acid.
Prepare
to melt your face off.
Yeah, the bad guy in this one is Jonathan Rhys, played by Clarion Hines. A Nobel Prize-winning scientist turned bioterrorist. And, you know, as the other movie had a young Daniel Craig, this one has a Gerard Butler as Terry Sheridan, a former associate of our boyfriend of Laura's, who's kind of a, you know, scumbag grave robber himself, who has been imprisoned, but you know, she agrees to help MI6 as long as they bust him out of jail, because he's familiar with the group who stole the orb and gonna need his help to steal it back. And like I said, a worldwide James Bondian pursuit ensues.
Yeah, which I thought this was kind of cool, you know, with the, you know, you know, I always love the ancient artifacts or the statues, and you know, when they, you know, there's the freaking what was it, the terracotta soldiers, I think it was, like,
yeah.
You know, and they're trying to, like, I'm just like, yeah, all those things are about to come to life, and it's gonna be bad.
But yeah, and the weird thing about these movies too was, I mean, they were all visually stunning. I mean, the first one, I mean, she's in Cambodia and Siberia and all these, like, just, you know, beautiful locations. And in this one, I'm like, yeah, I forget where all they went, but they all look just amazing sets that they had. I mean, it looked like, you know, something out of a video game, because it was just, you know, very visually well shot.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think that's one of the things that, you know, You know, of course, yes, there's a lot of CGI, but then, too, there's a lot of practical effects. And, you know, that to me is what makes the action sequences and everything else. Like, you know, I mean, going back and, you know, rewatch, like, they still pretty well stand the test of time. Like, it's not as bad as, you know, some of the films we've gone back and rewatched. And it's like, you know, for the time, it was great. But, I mean, you know, like, I mean, these are still very enjoyable movies today, so.
Oh, and, you know, of course, speaking of monkeys, as we were earlier, Donkey Kong. You know, of course, Laura's friends gets captured, and they use them as hostages to make her find Pandora's box. But as they're approaching the Cradle of Life, they have to fight these things called the Bigfoots, which are, like, weird cryptid ape monsters that appear out of, like, trees. Just, like, jumping in and out of trees and shit. And
I mean, it was kind of crazy. Like, you know, I mean, you know, like, these are almost, like, spiritual, you know, ancestor protector, like, type things.
Where kind of reminds me of the apes from the Congo. I mean, those white freaking super apes from the movie Congo.
But, I mean, you know, it's just crazy because, I mean, it's almost like, you know, they're shapeshifters, you know? It's like you get
ninja apes.
Yeah. Like, let's just hope, you know, in the next installment of Planet of the Apes, they haven't, you know, evolved to this level because we're all doomed.
Yeah. Damn dirty apes.
It's like, is that a tree? Oh, nope. It's killing me.
Oh. Yeah, and, you know, once they find the labyrinth and, you know, find the box floating in a pool of black acid, you know, they end up getting the thing and defeating the bad guy. But then Terry, you know, kind of, because the box kind of, like, you know, calls to them. And he kind of, while Laura's able to resist the urge, you know, he kind of falls to his, like, you know, criminal ways and is like, nah, I'm, you know, we killed the bad guy, but I'm taking this for myself. I can sell this for a bunch of money and whatnot. And, you know, fucking Laura, like, you know, tries to talk him out of it and is like, you won't do it. She freaking caps his ass. I mean, it's pretty gangster.
It's hard to be a gangster. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know, like, there was a movie called Volcano, and I can remember, like, there's this subway station, and, like, you know, a guy, like, you know, there's lava flowing through it, and he, you know, tries to, you know, make the jump off the back of the train and comes up short. So you just see him dissolve into the lava. Like, that has, you know, this scene, like, stands out of my mind much like that, you know, where you just see him dissolve in this pool of acid, and it's like
very much a, like,
shitty,
you know,
way to go.
T2 in the in the smelting pit.
Yes.
Just, oh yeah, that's being dissolved has gotta suck.
Like, I don't know, like, scenes like that for some reason just always, you know, are like, yeah, not that way. That's not a good way to
go. You know,
go.
It hurts like a mofo, but it's slow. You know, it's, there's no instant death. You're going to suffer for at least, you know, a few seconds. And, you know, kind of melting from the ground up.
Yeah. Like, head first, all right, you know, like, but no, you go in feet first and it's just all bad. Yeah, like, nothing good, you know, can come of playing in a pool of acid. So, when you see a little box floating in a pool of acid, just let it be.
No touchy.
It will dissolve you.
Let's back up a second and talk about some of the supporting characters that were in both movies.
Let's not.
Well, no, her two little sidekicks of Hillary, which was her butler, played by Chris Berry, and Bryce, the robotics tech expert, Noah Taylor, who was kind of a nerd. But those two guys were kind of, yeah, funny. To, I mean, they were definitely the comic relief of the,
yes,
movies. And like the one guy, he, like, lives in a freaking Airstream trailer with all his computers and shit in Laura's yard. She's like, we have 86 rooms in the mansion. You could live inside. He's like, no, I'm a man. I got to have my own space.
We have 86 rooms, but 85 of those are dedicated to Laura. So, I mean, yeah.
But I do like freaking, you know, even though, you know, the, you know, Hillary's kind of like the stereotypical prissy English butler. Like when the bad guys start raiding the house, you know, he gets up, you know, goes to his closet, puts on his bulletproof vest and gets out his shotgun and puts on his slippers and goes out and starts shooting motherfuckers.
You know, secretly in the back of his head all the time, he's just, I wish a motherfucker would.
I mean, he's kind of like Alfred, you know, he's like, he's probably like ex-military or something. He's like, I'm a butler now, but I still have a particular set of skills. Plus, when your, you know, boss is Laura Croft, a total badass, you kind of have to, like, you know, step up a little bit or you're just going to look like a bitch.
Yeah, I'm trying to relight, you know, this cigar here. And all right. And I think when you're going through a full, like, gas tank work on this thing, like, you're going to need a blowtorch. Like, you know, just...
Yeah, there's a lot of surface area on this cigar. I mean, I got a double flame lighter, and yeah, it takes a minute to get a good even light.
It's like, you know, it's like I know you're waiting on input, and it's like I can't do it, man. I'm.
Oh, but then we, like I said, they were scheduled to make a third movie, but you know, Angelina Jolie didn't want to reprise the role, and at that time, I don't know that there was anyone else that could have taken up that role. I mean,
yeah,
she was kind of iconic as Laura Croft then. So it's like,
I mean, even when, you know, we were talking about the trailers and, you know, stuff like that for the new Tomb Raider film. I mean, I was still holding on that, you know, Angelina is still, you know, Laura Croft. And, you know, it was like... I can't say, you know, watching the new film that I wasn't trying to draw a comparison between modern Laura Croft versus, you know, Angelina's Laura Croft. And, you know, that to me was like, you know, there were just certain things that, you know, like as much as I tried to let, you know, the new Tomb Raider film be its own entity and everything, like I was just guilty of, you know, well... I don't know, you know, there were just differences in...
Yeah, where Angelina was definitely the Laura Croft of our generation, this is definitely the Laura Croft of the new generation, where they've she's definitely based on the new games from 2013.
I mean, it's almost like, you know, you have our generation of Star Wars, and then you have the new generation of Star Wars. It's like,
which I was talking to somebody, and they're like, I heard that, you know, new Laura Croft was... You know, they should have, like, you know, had her play in her daughter. It's too different. I was like, no, that's someone who has not played the new games. Because this, from what I've... And I've not played those games.
Yeah, like three. I said, I've only played, you know, very 30 minutes.
Yeah, it
or
looks
so.
Very close to the... It's almost Die Hard on an island. You know, it's like... she's outgunned, outnumbered. She's going to end up dirty and beaten and you know, yippee-ki-yay by the end of it. But yeah, this is a Laura Croft, a young Laura Croft, who's not... the skilled badass gunslinger that we know. She's a young girl whose father has been missing for 7 years at this point, and she doesn't want to kind of take up the Croft mantle. She's, you know,
yeah, like
struggling to pay her bills and operating as a bike messenger
carrier. Yep.
But you know, she's still, like, you know, is doing like UFC, like, you know, fighting and stuff. So she's starting to develop her skills, but she doesn't have, you know, the knowledge and the training that OG Laura Croft has.
Well, I guess, you know, before we get in too much, at this point, if you have not seen the new movie, spoiler alerts, you know, it's been out a few weeks now, so this is definitely fair game. So you have been warned.
Yes, this one directed by Roar Utang or something. I can't pronounce it. But yeah, made for $94 million, has made $245 so far, but it is still in theaters. And but yeah, this one, you know, brings us to a Laura who is not the rich, skilled badass of the... She's like still very, very young, you know, and has, you know, potential to be a badass. But
well,
she's...
I mean, you know... She has skills, like, you know, let's, you know, I mean, when they do the flashbacks of her very early childhood, you know, where she's practicing with the bow and the apple, yes, you know, But I mean, even as the bike courier and stuff like that, like, you know, parkour and, you know, the, I mean, you yeah, do
the whole, was it Fox Hunt game? Yes. Well, that was pretty badass where it's, she's basically like all the bikers are and bicyclers, are having to chase the fox gets a head start and it's got a can of paint hanging off her back, bike dripping a trail. And she's got to stay away from them until the paint runs out to win the money. Or they have to capture her to get...
It's almost like capture the flag with bicycles.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but I mean...
But unfortunately, she gets distracted and hits a police car and gets arrested.
Oops.
So one of her dad's associates, Anna, comes and bails out of jail and tells her, like, hey, you know... Because she's kind of like, I don't want to be that type of Croft. And they're like, well, if you don't... Because at this point, he's been missing, and you got to be missing for like
presumed dead and
so many years before you can officially declare somebody dead. And they're like, if you don't come and sign the paperwork declaring your father dead and accepting your inheritance, the company's going to get broke off and sold off, and you're going to lose your father's house and all these other things. And she's finally, all right, you know, I'll do it. But then as she's starting to get her inheritance, she finds like a puzzle box that her father had basically like trained her on these puzzle boxes and finds a clue and finds his secret office that he's like, you know.
Well, and I thought that was cool, you know, where they're sitting in the attorney's office, you know, and, you know, he slides over the paperwork and she's getting ready to sign and, you know, he breaks protocol and is like, technically I'm not supposed to give you this until after the papers are signed, but here you go. And
and then she like bails, you know, and then when she finds her dad's office, she finds, you know, he's like, I was hunting this thing called like, Hukuri, which was supposed to be a Japanese queen that had the power of life and death, and her generals hid her away in some mountain island, and I was trying to stop it. So if you're reading this, I'm definitely dead. Like, burn all my research so it doesn't fall into the wrong hands. But of course, Laura's not good at following orders, and she's like, "Well, this is my chance to
go and find out what happened."
Yeah, so she goes, and you know, like I said, she's got physical skills, but she's not like, you know, the educated, doesn't know like, you know, multiple languages and all this other stuff. So she kind of stumbles around.
Well, and I thought that was kind of, you know, the Angelina Laura Croft is larger than life. And this here,
it's very much a prequel to what we're used to seeing.
You know, and that was the thing I had to kind of keep in mind because, you know, I was like, just her recklessness and everything else. I'm like, you know, yes, you haven't matured into, you know,
yeah, because as soon as
the
she
woman
shows up
Laura Croft,
in,
you know,
in like, is it China or wherever, trying to find, because she found like a letter that her father had booked a trip on a boat to find this island, and in another puzzle box. So she goes to find and ends up getting robbed by these like, you know, three Chinese teenagers and chases them all over and gets her bag back and kicks their ass. Be like, yeah, I won. They're like, oh yeah, well, we got a knife. And she's like, oh fuck. I've overplayed my hand. It has to run and ends up on this boat with the boat she's looking for with like Danny Wu, who is like this drunken sailor. And just like
burst out, you know, three sheets to the wind with a shotgun. What the fuck's all this ruckus?
And they're like, oh shit, he's drunk again. And he like passes out. And he, you know, he finds out that he's the son of the guy her father was supposed to meet. And she's like, well, your dad died on this quest. My dad died on this quest. We owe it to ourselves to find out what happened to him. And like, she's like, you know, they go off on this thing. And he's like, she's like, you know, you took advantage of a drunken sailor. Like, I should not have done this.
Well, I mean, I thought it was funny, you know, when she's like trying to bribe him. So, you know, she pulls off her shoe and pulls out, you know, like,
yeah,
all this money. And it's like, you know, this is yours now. And she's like, well, what's in the other shoe?
Yeah, because he's like, you know, you pull out the money. She's like, you know, take me to, and he's like, no way. And she's like, I could buy three of these junk boats with this kind of money. And she's like, yeah, but you know, you don't need a boat. You need a skilled, you know, sailor. And he's like, what's in the other boot? And of course they crash and end up on this island, which the island is overrun with guys who have been hunting this for 7 years, this thing that her father was looking for, led by good old Walter Coggins from Justified, who I always love seeing him show up in a movie. He plays an excellent bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
Working
yeah,
for an organization called Trinity. And yeah, and has been looking in the wrong place all this time and is using all these like shipwrecked fishermen as slaves. And claims that he had killed her father and killed, you know, Wu's father. And then she, like I said, this is when it turns into Die Hard on an island, because she escapes from the terrorists and has to, like, sneak around the island and try to free everybody.
Well, like, I was watching this, and I'm like, man, this is my worst enemy in a game. Like, it just became straight-up stealth mission.
Yeah. Oh, I hate a stealth mission. In the sequence where she tries to escape and falls in the river and ends up running into, like, a World War II bomber that's, like, falling apart as she's running across it and gets the freaking whatever parachute and then finds her dad, who is, like, you know, freaking old man Luke, who's been hiding on this island for 7 years trying to just, like, you know, keep them from getting the thing. And he's like, oh, don't worry, you know, if you burned all my stuff, there's no way they're gonna find it. And they're like, yeah, about that, I brought your diary, and now they have exactly what they need to find the thing. So, yeah, I'm going to have to go
scare her ass now. Damn it, child. You know, 7 years they've been on the, you know, the wrong path, and you're just giving them the one thing they needed. Like, but I haven't seen you in 7 years, so, you know.
Oh.
I can't reprimand you too badly, so.
And that's the one thing on all these, like, Tomb Raider, Indiana Jones, all this stuff. Freaking booby traps that are made with, like, rope and stuff are still functional, like, thousands of years later.
Well, like you were talking about,
hundreds of years later, this thing should have, like, rusted together and be no longer working.
I mean, that was kind of, you know, flashing back, like, to what you said earlier about the crash World War II plane, like, you know, her grabbing onto the wing, and I'm sorry, a 100-pound girl, like, the force of that water would have already decimated, you know, a 100-pound girl is not going to cause that thing to, you know.
Oh, yeah,
freaking dislodge and come crashing down.
Especially there in that, you know, in that wet environment, I think it would have, like, rusted dull to shit. Because I know Lake Lanier, you know, was kind of a man-made lake. And at one point, you know, a couple summers ago when the water got real low, there was a car that looked like from the 40s. It was like an old moonshiner car or something, you know, came up out of the water. And it had been sitting on the water so long, like, literally you would touch it and it, like, just fall apart.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm surprised the plane lasted as long as it did. Because as soon as she gets on it, it's like, oh, too much weight. We're falling apart now.
But yeah, the convenience of a parachute over the, you know, couple hundred foot waterfall. Like, what are the odds? What are the odds?
Yeah.
Congratulations, you have reached a checkpoint.
But I did like, you know, the movie starts off with her in like a martial arts class fighting, sparring with somebody. And basically gets choked out and can't get out of a hold. But, you know, one of the bad guys hunts her down. And she has to fight him. And it pretty much gets in that same chokehold. But this time she's clear-headed enough to flip his ass and then drown him in a freaking puddle. So it's like, all right, she's starting to learn the necessary skills to be a badass.
Well, I mean, you know, it was kind of, you know, the character progression. Because, yes, like you said, you know, she didn't have the knowledge to just tap, you know, and, you know, here it's like, okay, I've learned from my mistake, and
yeah, now you're in an actual life or death situation. You can't just tap out. You've got to, you know, maintain your calm and figure out how to whoop ass.
But yeah, that was kind of the cool thing. I mean, this is, you know, this is Lara Croft, you know, coming of age, I guess.
And I did like that, you know, the first movies very much had a mystical, magical element to them, where this one was very gritty and practical. Like, you know, the whole thing is like, oh, we dig this lady up, you know, it's going to unleash your power and stuff. But, you know, once they get through the tomb, it finds out, oh, no, she didn't have any kind of magical power. She had some kind of
infected.
She was a carrier, so it didn't harm her, but this disease was so powerful that a mere touch and even a dead body can still, you know, contain this pathogen that, like, just rots you, almost like super Ebola, just instantly rots your flesh as soon as you touch her. So they're like, oh, like, she wasn't, like, you know, put away by her generals. No, she hid herself away to protect the world and basically killed off, you know, anybody that was with her to prevent the infection from getting out. So all the booby traps were there to keep people, not necessarily keep people out, but to
keep people in. Yeah. And that was kind of the cool thing, you know, that they, you know, as they're exploring and, you know, having to solve some of the puzzles, you know, I mean, you know, like we talked about earlier, you know, a guy steps on, you know, a tile and, you know, the spikes shoot up impaling him. But then another one, you know, like the two, you know, big stone tomb doors close and then the floor starts falling. And it's like, you know,
you got to solve this like color puzzle with these rocks and stuff.
You know, so it was kind of cool, you know, like. You know, seeing those puzzles play, and you know, even though you're on opposing sides, like it forces everybody to play together in order for everyone to survive. Like, yeah. You know, there isn't just going to be one person makes it out. Like,
and I knew, like, before she even went on this quest to back it up a little bit, Nick Frost as the pawn shop owner.
Yes,
because, like I said, this is Laura Croft who's not super rich yet because she hasn't signed the paperwork declaring her father dead and gotten her inheritance. So the only thing she has is this jade medallion that he gave her that's like ancient. Yeah, and goes to this pawn shop and she's like, oh yeah, well this belonged to so and so who got it from so and so, you know, it's like several hundred years old. And he's like, well, do you have any paperwork that proves all this? She's like, if I had the paperwork, I'd be at Christie's right now instead of here. So, you know, and he's like, oh crap, this thing's worth a lot of money. I'm going to give you $10,000 for it. She's like, but this belonged to my dad. All right, now it's $9,000. You know how many dead dad stories I can't? He's just such a dick. It's funny. Oh.
Yeah, I think she ends up at like, what, $8,000 or something? Like,
he keeps negotiating in the every time she asks for money. Like, all right, now I'm taking another $1,000 away. Oh.
But it was kind of cool. Like, I mean, you know, like later on, she goes back to the pawn shop and he's like, all right, you are who you say you are. We got some badassery behind this counter. And
yeah, which is
was almost like, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, to me, it was almost like, you know, the first time the Punisher goes and opens up the armory.
It gets the freaking bulletproof vest with the skull on it. It was like, oh, now it's Laura Croft. Because, you know. We'll get to that in a second, but yeah, they find the queen and figure out that she has this disease and fight off the bad guys, but her father gets infected and he's like, you know, we finally got this time together, but you got to leave me. I'm going to blow this up to keep it from world. You've got to stop them from getting off the island with the disease. So, cause Walter Coggins like chops off a finger and puts it in a Ziploc bag. And he's like, this is all I need to develop this weapon. And she chases him out and ends up getting into a fight. And then, like, boss move, like, shoves the freaking finger down his throat and punches him in the face. So he bites it and kicks him into a ravine as he's dissolving. And, you know, gets off the island with her buddy and all the fishermen and whatnot. But, yeah, as soon as she gets back, she, you know, go ahead and, like, all right, now I know my father's dead. I'm going to sign the paperwork and, you know, get somebody to run my company. And I'm going to, you know, kind of. But then as she's looking through she gets this list of all the businesses that they own now. And she notices like all the crates that was supplying these guys was from some company called, was it Panara or something like that. And she realized it's a company that they own. So Trinity is actually like inside her company. And that's one of the reasons why her dad was, you know, kind of doing all this stuff off the books is because he realized that there was a threat within his own company. So she goes back to his office and finds all the files on them and figures out that her guardian, who now she put in charge of the company, actually works for Trinity. So she's like, now I have to pick up my dad's business and, you know, defeat evil or run up, and goes back to the pawn shop to, now that she's super rich, to buy her dad's medallion back, and notices a gun cabinet in the back. She's like, really? And goes back there looking at that. And the, you know, pawn shop owner's wife is like, oh, that's the compensated HKs with the extended mags. Do you like those? And she's like, those are my favorite. She's like, oh yeah, I really like these. I think I'm gonna need two. And I'm like, yes.
Yeah, that was like
my favorite sequence of the whole movie.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great, you know, closure to, you know, her, you know, full blown Lara Croft.
Yeah. Like, so by the next movie, we'll see her like, you know, With the twin holsters dual wielding the H&Ks.
And, you know, and I gotta say, you know, once I was, you know, like you said, you know, that is this generation's Tomb Raider. And, you know, like, I think that, you know, this is set up, you know, for much more longevity. You know, I mean, like, this one was kind of weird because, you know, the first two previous films, I mean, it was kind of balls-to-the-wall action from start to finish, where this one here went so much deeper into the backstory and everything else that, like, I found myself, like, you know, all right, it's been an hour and a half, and we haven't even made it to the tomb yet. Like,
yeah, and that was, I guess, a complaint some people had of the original was that it was too just straight into it. There wasn't a whole lot of character development or backstory, where this one definitely was a more real, you know, well-rounded story. It was much richer film than the previous good popcorn action movies.
I definitely felt myself more invested in the characters, you know, and like that was something that, you know, yes, with the original Lara Croft, you were invested in that sole character, but here, like the supporting characters and everything, like tying their backstory to, you know, Croft's backstory, and, you know, just brought things much more full circle. And it made for a, you know, much more dynamic and complex, you know, story arc. And, you know, that's why I say I think that this is going to have a, you know, much better chance at longevity and future development. And, you know, to see her, you know, become the woman that Lara Croft is, like, you know, instead of the, I don't know, to me it was almost like, you know, this was the, you know, the teenager Lara Croft, you know, I'm young, I'm reckless, my skills aren't completely developed yet, you know, I've learned to adapt and overcome, and, you know, the next one, I seriously just, like you said, it just better be balls to the wall. Like,
yeah, and Lord Richard Croft, played by Dominic West. I do like when he meets her and finally, because at first he thinks she's a hallucination. when she finally convinces her she's like, real.
Usually you're the one that disappears.
Like, but he's like, so, you know, what have you done? You know, did you go to Oxford or Cambridge? You know, and she's like, I'm a bike messenger. Like, I've done none of those things. She's like, there's still time. You're young, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, I like at the first of the movie when Anna comes to her and is like, you need to take over the company. She's like, I'm not that type of Croft. I'm not my father. Well, then once she goes through all this and learns who her father really was, and then
she's like,
does take over
I'm
the company.
I'm exactly like my father.
Well, she's like, I think you should run the day-to-day operation of the company. You know, I'm not that type of Croft, which has a completely different meaning from the first time she says it. So you know, the first time she's like, no, I'm not, you know, the rich girl doing stuff for the world.
Yeah, like
but now she's like, oh, I'm my father's type of Croft. I'm the guy who's, you know, saving the world. Yeah, I'm not the businesswoman. It was kind of a cool, you know, bringing it back around.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't know, you know, I mean, that was almost like, I don't know. I mean, almost kind of, you know, felt like it's almost like a young Bruce Wayne, you know?
Lucius, run my company. I'm going to go kick bad guys' asses at night.
Yeah. But I don't know. Like you said, you know, just when, you know, she has the 2H, it's just like, shit just got real. And then it's like, but that's the end. And I'm like, damn it. Now it's just beginning. Like, I mean, that was a great, you know, build and anticipation for an upcoming film. So.
Yeah. Now I need dual wielding, like, ass kicking Lara Croft.
Yes.
Fighting robots. But yeah, I did like the grittiness and the realness of this versus, like, the more supernatural elements of the first
well,
two.
I mean, you know, and one of the things that we didn't touch on was, you know, like, once they arrive to the island and they're captured and you see, you know, all of the, you know, forced indentured, you know, servitude and everything else of, you know, people that's like, oh, you know, here I've collapsed. Well, now you just got a gunshot to the head and stuff. Like the, you know, almost like, you know, you see mining operations portrayed, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just, you know, you work till you're dead. And, you know, if you're not dead, you better be working. Like, but, you know, some of that arc, you know, as they're trying to locate the tomb and everything, I mean, just put on a scale, you know, of what kind of force, you know, they're really up against, you know, when it comes to Trinity. And, you know, I don't know. It was kind of cool. Like, I was almost expecting to see, like, somebody I thought would have been awesome to cast would be, you know, the guy that freaking played Abraham from The Walking Dead. Like, you know, I could definitely see him with a couple of machine guns. Like,
Yeah, but and even Mathis says, like, you can't stop us. Your Trinity is everywhere, you know. And then, you know, once she finds out that, oh, Trinity's within my own company, this is a lot bigger worldwide threat that I'm going to have to deal with. So, yeah, it's like, you know, kind of like Bruce Wayne going off to become a ninja. She's probably going to, like, be, yeah, by next time we see her, she's going to be like, yeah, now I've, you know, learned all the skills I need to learn to take these people down. Gave it, like, a little bit of that, you know, political intrigue, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm kind of curious, too, because now, you know, she knows that her father's dead. She has the, you know, essentially unlimited wealth, you know, something that she was severely lacking. I mean, you know, when the first, you know, the film kicks in, you know, back to her original fight, you know, and it pans to the, you know, the sign on the wall, you know, no pay, no play. And, you know, she's like, well, you know, just let me continue. You know, I'm struggling, but, you know, I can pay you next week, you know, to continue, you know, some of my, you know, combat training and stuff. And it's like, you know, now she's got to be, you know, freaking, like, I don't know. Like, there's probably going to be, it's almost going to be like Arrow. Like, you know, you're going to see her walk into the dojo and go down in some elevator, and it's just going to be like.
Yeah, she's already got her, like, her dad's, like, secret office, which was badass. I mean, that's her, like, bat cave. And I, and two, I don't know if it's the same location or not, but Croft Manor looks very, at least from the outset, looks very much like Croft Manor from the first two movies.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they shot in the same location or not, but that castle, you know, looks pretty close to what we saw previously. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to see where they take this. So as we wrap this up, any final thoughts on this big bastard we've been smoking?
Oh, my God. Like, halfway through and I'm like.
Lungs hurt.
Yeah. Like, this is a workout smoke. Like. You know, oftentimes we talk about, you know, how a cigar can, you know, force you to sit down and relax. And, dude, this thing, like, just the sheer, like, I'm tired of, like, drawing off this thing. Like,
yeah, my mouth is tired. Yeah, I don't know how anybody smokes the 880. like, I've not seen that anywhere yet, but I don't even know if I, like, found it, if I could smoke it. That's, I mean, like, an all-day stick.
I mean, you know, we often talk about, you know, finding these powerhouses and getting our ass kicked. This thing is not kicking my ass because of the power. It's just kicking my ass because of the sheer size and, like, lung capacity that it takes to power through it. Like, dude, like, I don't know. Like, you know, with the FDA, you know, starting, you know, their comments and everything else on premium cigars, like, you know, somebody's going to do a thing and be like, nah, smoking this is actually good for your lungs because it's forcing you to. You
know? It's cardio, man.
Yeah. Like, is it bad to say that, you know, I was like, damn, I'm like, I love the cigar. The flavor and everything is great. But damn, like, I'm physically tired of smoking it.
Yeah, I don't think I could. I mean, this one's only like 4.5, 475. I'm like, I don't know if I can make the 880. I mean.
Like, that may be a, you know, we talk about finding the challenge smoke, and
this one may be it.
You know, around the Super Bowl, you know, there's the football, you know, that Arturo Fuente, you know, or maybe it's the egg, you know, where it's just a big, girthy bastard, and, dude, I don't know, like.
But to mention it.
I'm going to need to practice some, like, jaw exercises or something, like, to, you know. Before I could attempt to smoke an 80 ring gauge, because this 70 is, like, bigger ring gauges aren't always better. Like, and this is over my comfort limit.
But you touched on it a second ago. All the FDA regulations that they put in place, what, a year or so ago now, they're finally starting to kind of back off on that, and they've opened it up where. I think from now until May, sometime in May, they've opened up a public comment so people can write and, you know, give the FDA suggestions and your opinions on whether or not premium cigars should be exempted from, you know, FDA regulation. So Google that. I mean, it's probably on the FDA.gov website. Do yourself a favor if you are a cigar smoker and you want to keep cigars around and, you know, affordable, because, you know, all these regulations are going to not only hurt, you know, innovation, it's also going to drive the prices way up on these things. So do yourself a favor, support your cigar rights, join the CRA, write the FDA, and let them know, lay their fucking hands off our cigars.
Make your voices known.
Yep. And also, you know, protect your Second Amendment rights, but that's a totally different thing. But with that...
Adventure passed from father to his daughter. And as I grow with age, I'm gaining strength, mental composure. A gift for solving puzzles in the body of a soldier. I live a happy life, though in disguise I suffer boredom. Independent as an orphan and the heiress to a fortune. I long to go exploring and the surge I'm not ignoring. Seize the opportunity when Trinity comes calling. I want an adventure, my father's avenger. I'll never surrender, absorb all the pressure. The world I will venture to fight the oppressors and kill the aggressors to be his successor.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Boozehounds return.
It's time for Beer 30. So what are we drinking this week, Brad?
Ah, so this week we're drinking something special. This is going to be Ennis and Gunn. Barrel Age Kindred Spirits. And this is
Faith in Begotter, laddie.
Yeah. This is going to be a Irish whiskey barrel aged stout. And I think I'd been on the search for this for quite some time and had been unable to locate it in a lot of places. But I'm a big fan of just about everything else that we've tasted from Ennis and Gunn. So I was like, you know what? Let's switch gears, move from the rum barrels, and you know, try the Irish whiskey barrel. And I've got to say, coming in at 6.1%, it does not disappoint.
Yeah, it's a Scottish stout aged in Tullamore DEW triple distilled Irish whiskey barrels.
Yeah, and I mean, this thing is just awesome. I mean... it's malty, it's rich, it's, you know, just complex in general, which, I mean, that's just comes with the territory of Ennis and Gunn, by and large. But, this definitely does not disappoint.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's aromas of dark chocolate, buttered brown toast, and full-bodied creamy with rich malts and gentle hop bitterness. Yeah, and I like the few, because, you know, the OG Ennis and Gunn, a lot of those are more, you know, ales, and, you know, now they've started kind of putting out a few stouts, which, you know, is always
right up my alley. Yeah. I welcome all the stouts. You know, I just get, you know, I mean, now that we're moving into springtime and soon to be summer, I mean, you know, I'll switch because you want something a little lighter on the palate, you know, for the hotter days. But, you know, a stout is always going to be my pretty much go-to.
Yeah, just that, you know, that, you know, Irish whiskey, like, just the, you know, the creaminess of in the, like, you know, the oaky vanilla from, like, the barrels. It's always a good combination with a stout.
Yeah, and this one, you know, I mean, the hops are definitely present. Like, you know, I get, you know, the taste of hops, but it fades real quick. It doesn't have any kind of long bitterness. So, I mean, truly, it's almost like you're just, you know, getting there. You know, they're just there enough to say, hey, guys, yep, we're a beer, and we've got hops, and goodbye. Here's that complex creaminess that you were looking for.
Like, and, you know, and a lot of the barrel age stuff we drink is bourbon barrel, so you get that, you know, vanilla and kind of caramely taste. But this being Irish whiskey, it's got like a little more, I don't know, citrusy bitterness to it than bourbon barrel age.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't know, I just can't say enough good things about this. I mean, you know, it's just looking at, you know, the descriptions and everything, I mean, they've hit the, you know, nail on the head. And I gotta say, I'm probably going to give this one a 4.5.
Yeah, and if you're confused, you know, it's you know, Irish and Scottish. So, yeah, it doesn't matter.
It's the best of both worlds. It's where you can take your leprechaun to the Highland Games.
So, kilt up and get you one of these. So, what are we rating this on the untapped scale?
I already said a 4.5.
Oh, yeah. I was distracted because I was drinking.
Yes.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is one of those beers that, I mean, you just get lost in. And, yeah.
Take you one of these and watch Leprechaun in the Hood.
Yes.
Part two.
And with that,
we'll be right back.
Yes, science!
And it's time for some science.
This is the part where I get educated, right?
Sometimes.
All right, cool.
Other times I just talk crap.
I feel like that's most times, but I'm able to weed through, you know, the BS and actually find, you know, something that is relevant and worthy of absorbing into my sponge-like brain.
Well, you know, I always have to talk about the potential of the robot apocalypse, but this week, just to mix it up, I've got a few stories of robots doing good things.
And now for something completely different. But is it a good thing? Because I just looked at the headline, and I've got some thoughts on if it's a good thing, but I digress. I'll let you continue.
Well, home building startup Icon has invented a 3D printing robot that can build houses in 12 hours. So, this is going to be something that, you know, not only does it can build housing quickly, you know, for, you know, with the homeless problems, especially in, you know, poorer countries or whatnot, but it also does it cheaply. Like one of these houses can, which is, you know, only 650 square feet. They also have a 800 and something square feet model, but can print them within 12 to 24 hours at a cost of around $10,000. So for less than a car, robots can build you a house.
Which is pretty awesome. I mean, you know, now, of course, there is probably going to be a human component, you know, as far as electrical plumbing.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, like the you know, the computer will make, print the walls, the roof, the floors, but then also leave conduit space because, you know, after that, a worker actually has to come in and add the windows, the doors, the plumbing, the electrical systems, because that can't really be 3D printed out of concrete yet. But, you know, it's like I said, to, you know, build a fully livable house within a day or two. I mean, the structure is there within 24 hours, but, you know, probably another couple days to add all the accessories and whatnot. You know, it's especially say something like, you know, when we had like the big floods and hurricanes and stuff in Texas and Florida, you know, it's, or, you know, even down in, the Philippines are still recovering. You know, this is something that could, you know, at least, you know, make better temporary housing than some, like, you know, FEMA trailers and whatnot.
Absolutely. Now, you know, for the cynic in me, you know, here it is. A robot knows your entire layout of your said house. So, you know, you're not going to have a tactical advantage there, you know, should the uprising occur.
But it's made out of concrete. I mean, you could bunker that thing pretty good. You might have to do some reinforcing, but, and yeah, hell, 800 square foot's like, you know, bigger than some apartments I've had. So,
oh yeah,
that's a decent size house.
You know, and in fact, all right, you know, all, you know, BSing aside, I mean, looking at the interiors, I mean, you know, they definitely look, you know, livable. And I mean, you know, and the fact too that, you know, it is, you know, all concrete. And I mean, you know, if thinking about storms and, you know, what happens to, you know, wood frame houses during severe weather and stuff like that, like, you know, I mean, this may be a great, you know, alternative, you know, or, you know, something for a, you know, secure location. I mean, 10 grand, like, you can't get, you know, a good made storm cellar or anything, you know, for that cost. So, I mean, you know, this, nothing else, maybe a great, you know, retreat, you know, for riding out severe weather and stuff. I mean,
yeah, and we talked about a company doing something similar earlier, but it was a much smaller house, and it was almost like a that one was pretty much a one room round house, where this one has like a living room, a bedroom, a bathroom. It's a more functional house than previous 3D printed models we've seen. And the company plans to, you know, debut the prototype house at this year's South by Southwest Festival in Austin. But they're also talking about partnering with international nonprofits to build a bunch of homes in low-income, you know, communities in El Salvador by the end of 2019. So they're already, you know, planning to kind of implement this in some of those like lower-income, you know, places where housing is not, you know, very good.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think it's awesome. You know, I don't know. It would be great if, you know, I mean, hell, I don't know. I mean, obviously beach, you know, living on a street or something. I don't know. I'm kind of curious to see where it goes and, you know, maybe hopefully the trend and, you know, we can ease, you know, some of the, you know, social struggles or anything. You know, it'd be awesome to see, you know, some of the, you know, veteran assistance companies, you know, hey, we can get you, you know, off the streets, you know, I mean, you know, maybe find a way for a VA loan, you know, to help cover for some of this or something, you know, I don't know, you know, I mean, I think the possibilities are limitless and it's cool that, you know, there's companies that are able to do this and I don't know. I mean, I would love to have, you know, a smaller version of this, you know, outside, like I said, you know, make it hell of a storm cellar.
Yeah, and from 3D printing houses to 3D printing food, a Japanese company called Open Meals has developed a 3D food printing. It's kind of in the conceptual stages right now, but basically what it can do is, you know, a chef in another country can design a dish. The computer will scan it for flavor and shape and all that stuff, and then print it out at your location. So if you're like, man, I really want some a freaking Longhorn steak, but I don't want to go to Longhorns, you know, theoretically this thing could scan you a steak and print it up. I mean, it's not made with actual meat right now. It's a flavored gelatin that's made to look like, you know, whatever it's printing. And at this point it prints out in little I think 5 millimeter cubes that stacks together, and so it's almost, your food comes out looking like something out of a NES 8-bit video game. But as the technology progresses, they're wanting to get the pixels down smaller so they can be more realistic, kind of as, you know, when video games went from 8-bit to 64 to whatever bits they're at now, the pixels got small enough that the stuff actually looks like real shit.
Yeah, this one here, I mean, all right. I guess it could have its uses, but like, I mean, just look at the quality of health, you know, from things being genetically modified and, you know, everything of that nature. Like, pretty much everything now is GMO. Like, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm still old-fashioned, you know. Go to the woods, find your food, take your food, and, you know, go from woods to refrigerator. Like...
I mean, yeah, hell, this could be a option.
I mean, it could be great, you know, like, you know, I mean, you know, I mean, NASA, I could see, you know, utilizing this technology, you know, maybe it could have a use on, I mean, hell, if nothing else, you know, I mean, you know, maybe we redefine the meaning of food bank and, you know, here you know, actually can get some nourishment and everything, you know, have something a lot better. So, I mean, I guess there could be some, you know, really positive social implications.
Yeah, I just remembered, like, yeah, the food replicators from Star Trek, where it's pretty much you just type in whatever you want and it just appears. So when we get to, like, the technology to that level where it's like, yeah, I don't have to run to the store. I can 3D print me a cheeseburger.
It's almost like the Jetsons, you know. Yeah. You just reach in and it magically appears. Like,
as long as the gelatin, because right now it's printing with flavored gelatin, so... I don't know how accurate the flavoring of the gelatin sushi
but
is.
Then but. Again, like, if you actually read the ingredient labels on most processed foods, probably 90% of the ingredients you would wonder, what the fuck is this?
Like, It's like, as long as it looks right, and I mean, it's got to taste better than some of the vegan, like, fake food I've seen, so.
I don't know. See, I think this is taking that.
If they can beat that, then I'm like, all right, I'll try your Jell-O sushi.
Like, you're going to, you know, start seeing labels that says, not made with any actual food.
It's like in a world where people were eating Tide Pods. This is like remember the old Jell-O like cooking thing? I'm not Jell-O, Play-Doh.
Yes.
You'd like print out like fake Play-Doh food. It's like that. We're eating Play-Doh. Oh.
Take your Play-Doh to your easy bake oven and you know, I mean, you got yourself a full course meal.
With a side of crayons and some glass licking for dessert. IBM has revealed the world's smallest computer. It has like, you know, 1x1 millimeter size boards, but it's, you know, has like a fully fledged processor. They say it's one of these only as powerful as like an old 86 chip from the 90s, but that's pretty good considering how big those were then, something the size of a grain of salt.
I mean, you know, think about, you know, yeah, I mean, everything was massive.
Yeah, and like I said, it's this basically smaller than a grain of salt. And in this article, there are pictures of it laying in a pile of salt. But what they're basically wanting to do is kind of use it as they're calling it, cryptographic anchors. And they're wanting to use them kind of as a counterfeiting proof. Because they say, like, you know, fraud costs the world $6 billion a year, where these little things that are only cost like maybe 10 cents a unit can be embedded in pretty much everything and keep tracking of products from, you know, manufacturer to shipper to end user, and prove that, all right, the thing I ordered definitely is the thing I received and has not been fucked with. Cause kind of like, you know, your computer chip and your debit cards now, or the little strips that are in most money. It's something that's it's going to combat, you know, counterfeiting.
But I mean, even with, I don't know. I mean, anytime you have something electronic, like, I don't think there is a foolproof way to make anything hack-proof. Like, to come out and say this is hack-proof, you have just, you know, put a target on your head. And I don't know. I mean, you know, and then again, I think about the United States and, you know, yeah, you're right. You know, we're just now getting the chip cards and stuff. But I mean, if you look at some of the European cards and things like that for, you know, debit, and dude, they're 10 years ahead of us. Like, they were using these chips 10 years ago. Like, we wait until things are such a problem, like, there is no proactivity, and, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, you know, for it to record the who, what, where, when, why, and, you know, details, like, I don't know. I mean, you know, when you hear, I mean, the city of Atlanta just got hacked and, you know, by some ransomware and stuff. I mean, it's been a couple of weeks, and they still haven't got all the systems back online and got that stuff straightened out, so I don't know. Cool? Yes. I mean, but
time will tell.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to go from the real life versions of, you know, Star Trek technology to Star Wars technology, you know, now you can be a moisture farmer on your very own Tatooine. scientists from MIT just published a paper in Nature Communications for a device that essentially harnesses water from air, even in dry deserts. A lot of the previous versions of this are either unpractical because they're way too expensive and require way too much energy, or they use a method called fog harvesting, which collects, you know, already liquid water straight from fog, but it requires a high level of humidity to work and can't really work in dry desert air. Where this new technology, you know, is, you know, being field tested now, can harvest around 2.8 liters of water per day and requires almost no energy. It's completely solar powered. It's runs off a metal organic framework that kind of a crystalline, you know, structure that is heated by the sun and soaks up water like a sponge, but then once it cools off, it reheats and releases the, you know, liquid water from this, you know, crystalline framework. So it's something that's very easy to operate, easy to make, and, you know, with anything, the less, you know, moving parts and electricity required, it's, you know, a whole lot easier to implement in, you know, places where, you know, water is kind of scarce.
I mean,
or even as, you know, as we're talking about future going to places like Mars and stuff that has, you know, frozen water, but, you know, otherwise is very dry, you know, something that might be able to, you know, be used in future colonization projects.
Yeah. I mean, definitely cool for a, you know, like, you know, a proof of concept, I guess is what they would consider this, but, I don't know. I mean, dude, I mean, 2 liters of water, I mean, that's enough to sustain you, you know, for I mean, you know, if you're, I mean, I don't know. I mean, this would be a great, you know, tool to have in a bug out bag or, you know, something like that. Or, hey, yeah, I'm going on a, you know, a camping trip to the desert and God forbid should, you know, something happen, then.
Yeah, because I've been kind of getting into prepping lately and have been working on building me a get home bag for the car. You know, this is something that definitely, you know, if they make it, you know, smaller and man portable, would definitely be something that would be good in a bailout bag kit to have around the house. That's all the science I have for you this week. Time to talk about some news.
Hello?
Hey, who's interrupting my intro?
Is this a joke?
This is no joke, kid. This is the Earth Station DCU podcast.
No clothes from anybody. Sickening.
We're not that kind of podcast, kid. We talk DC news, comics, movies, and television.
You gotta do better than that.
We reviewed Supergirl, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and Arrow every week.
That a fact. How much do I owe you?
You don't owe us anything. The podcast is free.
Oh, I just heard this story in the cab, and it is all I can think about.
We are part of the ESO Network.
This is amazing.
Why, thank you. And join us every week for another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Now, can we get back to the show, please?
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
So up this week, we're going to talk about some upcoming films, some stuff that's been renewed, some things that are in the works, and we'll jump right into it. So the very first thing is Deadpool 2. We finally, you know, have our first of, I'm sure, many trailers to come. And looking at this, it does not look too disappoint.
It looks badass. Depender's back.
Yeah, I, you know, and I don't know, with the introduction of Cable, like, you know, I was almost like, you know, okay, they're going to call it Deadpool 2, but is it really, you know, just Cable version 1, you know, with, you know, Deadpool, you know, just giving commentary and stuff? But, I mean, it looks, I don't know, very much Deadpool and, you know.
And they've already talked about there being an X-Force movie, but apparently we're getting that a little bit earlier because it looks like Deadpool 2 is like, you know, the X-Force prequel from the trailers. We're starting our own super-duper team, and we're going to call it X-Force. Isn't that a little derivative? Yes, it is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's I don't know, man. You know, it's really kind of cool, you know, the success that, you know, Deadpool has shared and the, you know, sort of the mainstream attention and the fact that, you know, even with, you know, Disney's accusation or acquiring of, you know, Marvel and everything that, you know, they didn't, you know, or I'm sorry, yeah.
They already had Marvel.
Yeah, well, I mean, with Fox and, you know, them keeping, you know, Deadpool at a, you know, R rating and, you know, not shying away. I mean, just, I don't know. I mean, it looks like it's just going to be as enjoyable, if not more, than the first film that we got.
Oh, yeah. It looks like they've just taken everything from the original. That, too, and is, like, from the action sequences of it. Like, the first one, like I said, Deadpool, like, they kept writing in the jokes where, like, oh, I forgot my big bag of guns because basically they didn't have the funding for these giant, like, gun battle sequences. But this one is like, oh, we made a shitload of money last time. Let's give them all the money and let them do whatever the fuck they want.
And, you know, and that, I think that's going to be awesome. But, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, having some of those constraints in the first film kind of made it, you know, they had to improvise more. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I just don't want it, you know, to get so big that it can't fail. And then, you know, people get too comfortable and, you know, we see a decline in the quality of Deadpool.
Yeah.
That would be my only concern is that, you know.
But we've seen what the regular MCU has done with these huge budget movies. Kind of cool what, you know, Deadpool could do with Disney money.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, Deadpool with the backing of the mouse, I mean, anything's possible.
Yep.
I
wonder how many jokes he's going to make about about that now. Because he was very, like, self-referential in the first one, like, you know, making fun of, like, some of Fox's stuff. Like, we've only got two X-Men in this movie. It's almost like they couldn't afford anybody else.
Yeah.
See how much commentary he does on, you know, the real world in this one.
But, I mean, you know, then again, you know, like you said, with the, you know, introduction of X-Force and everything, like, I still want to, you know, see more of X-Men and to see X-Men done properly. I mean, you know, we've had some of the one-off films like Logan, you know, that has just, you know, been absolutely phenomenal. But, I mean, I would love to see early 90s X-Men, everybody, you know, all costumed up and, you know, yeah, Gambit and Storm.
It's gotten pushed back till next year, I think. But we're supposed to be getting the Dark Phoenix version of the X-Men. And another thing I saw that, you know, because when Marvel didn't own all the Fox stuff like X-Men and Fantastic Four, they killed off a lot of those characters and stopped using them in the comic books because they're like, we're not going to support something we don't own. But now that they own them again, they've reintroduced the Fantastic Four in the comic books. So, you know, as the MCU, this version of the MCU kind of starts to wrap up and they start looking at the either a reboot of the MCU or future projects, you know, we may finally get a good Fantastic Four movie out of the deal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, talking about such a sore subject to talk about Fantastic Four because, you know, we saw some of the early trailers and it was like, all right, can I actually say that I may want to see the movie? Nope, serious letdown. Like,
yeah. I didn't even bother to see that last one.
We'll recant that statement real quick. I mean, you know, and unfortunately, that's kind of been the trend. So I don't know. I mean, we're talking about Deadpool 2. We'll see it, you know, in theaters May 18th. And, you know.
And then 2 days later.
2 days later.
What was it, Solo?
Yeah.
But then we have this month, we have freaking Super Troopers 2.
We have Super Troopers 2.
Summer movie season's starting to look good already.
Oh, yeah. And, I don't know. It's going to be a epic summer. I mean, you know, we can't, you know, not talk about upcoming April movies without, you know, talking about April 27th and we get Infinity War. You know, I mean.
Yeah, I went to see Ready Player One and that Infinity War trailer on the big screen is just like, oh my god, this is gonna be so sweet.
Yeah, I still haven't got a chance to see Ready Player One. Can you give us a non-spoiler, you know, take on?
And you know, to predict the future, our next episode we're definitely gonna go deep into it. But since it just came out, we did not want to, you know, violate the 2 week spoiler warnings. But I loved it. It's awesome. I almost have to see it again just because it's so packed. Because that's one of the things we talked about when we talked about the book was like, how are they going to put all these references in this movie? And they did. I mean, there's so much stuff going on that I'm like, I don't think my eyes could keep up with all the references. I really do have to see it a second time just to pick up the things I missed. And it's fits the theme of the book, but they've changed certain things for probably cinematic reasons. But so it's a different story, but it's still awesome. It's I loved it. I can't recommend it enough.
Awesome. Yeah, I you know, that is definitely going to be on this week's agenda for me to get around to see it, not once but twice, maybe a few times. I mean, I've read the book, you know, I think 5 times, so I mean,
yeah, cuz when I saw it too, it was opening weekend and it was, everything was sold out, so I had to see it in like regular. I want to get one of the 3D showings or IMAX showings to just to see how
I think I definitely want to do IMAX. I mean, just, you know, the full immersion of it all. And I've purposely not did any research or anything. So, I mean, but, I mean, in talking about, you know, just the success so far, I mean, you know, it debuted top of the box, you know, for, you know, a 4-day total of $53 million. I mean, that's nothing to scoff at. I mean, you know, it's kind of cool, you know, to see, you know, some of our fandoms, you know, and everything. And you know, yes, it being a, you know, bestseller book, but I mean, you know, that's not really a 10 years ago, that movie probably would not have the success if we haven't, you know, seen the success of, you know, some of the comic book and superhero movies and, you know, stuff,
yeah,
you know,
in the just last. Just from the opening credits, too, the screenplay was, you know, co-written by Ernest Cline, so the original author got to put as much of his influence in the final product, where a lot of times, you know, you write the book and then you're just completely, once you sell the rights, you're not involved in it at all. So it's kind of cool that, you know, he got to, you know, kind of take a second crack at his story instead of somebody else just trying to, that's not as familiar with the source material, adapting something like that.
Yeah, so I'm excited, and yeah, next episode, love to take a deeper dive into, you know,
the foray. I got
to
reread the book before the next episode. It's been a while since I've
read it. You have not, you know, not only for you but, you know, for listeners as well, Will Wheaton narrating Ready Player One, you know, that just reading the book but then hearing, you know, the narration just took it to a whole new level. So I highly recommend checking out the audiobook version of Will Wheaton narrating if you haven't, you know.
I might have to download that.
Check that out yet. Switching gears to a completely different light. I mean, you know, this whole, you know, main segment and talking about Tomb Raider and video game theme movies. You know, in my childhood, there was Doom, there was Wolfenstein, and there was Duke Nukem. Well, apparently, John Cena, a lot of folks will recognize him from, you know, the World Wrestling Entertainment. Anyway, he has set to, you know, be casted to star as Duke Nukem.
Yeah, I don't think they could have got a better. I mean, he looks the part.
I mean, he definitely has the build and the look now.
I mean, Duke Nukem, if they'd done this movie in the 80s, would definitely be a Dolph Lundgren film, but he's a little bit old to be Duke. And John Cena's done like a lot of comedy stuff lately. He's almost like kind of, you know, he started off his acting career in these action movies like The Marine and stuff, but he's been making appearances in, like, you know, online sketches. He's got a comedy movie coming out called, I think, Parents Are Such Cock Blockers. I mean, the dude is, like, legit funny, so I think he can pull off the cheesiness of Duke Nukem.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of cheesiness that goes into, you know, just the WWE in itself. So, I mean, to see a, you know, hard R, you know, Duke Nukem. I mean, obviously the ratings and everything haven't been announced, but I mean, dude, it's Duke Nukem. How do you not have that film rated R? But yeah, I'm just kind of, you know, curious to see, you know, I mean, you know, Platinum Dunes is a company that, you know, has come up and, you know, they've done some lesser budget stuff, you know, I mean, The Purge, Ouija, Friday the 13th, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So, I mean, you know, when it comes to creating some iconic, you know, films, they've been able to pull it off. And, you know, we'll just have to, you know, see what happens. But I don't know. I'm I guess time will tell. Switching gears, we're going to talk about something that I'm on the fence about. So, you know, we got Sony's standalone Venom movie trailer, and I just in the little bit that I got to see, I don't know. You know, I'm so on the fence because for so long, you know, I mean, I hope this is an introduction into, you know, seeing Carnage on a big screen. I don't know that we'll get it.
But it's Sony,
I mean, you know, but our, you know, the symbiote Venom, I mean, has not necessarily had a... Some of the animated stuff has been awesome. Live action, not so much. And yeah. I don't know...
Well, the problem with the trailer is...
There's not enough Venom. There's
no
Venom.
There is no Venom at all. It's an entire trailer of Tom Hardy freaking out in a freaking X-ray machine and some like weird voiceover stuff and him running through the woods. Show me Venom in a Venom movie trailer, and this is one that's got me kind of concerned.
Yeah, like I said, that's one that I want to be excited for, but like I'm going to have to really, you know, keep my expectations in check here. Like, I just...
Speaking of Ready Player One, if you sign up for Audible, your first book is free with your 30-day free trial. So it's either $30, $31, or like I said, sign up for the free thing, get it, and then cancel your membership before your 30 days run out.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, man, I actually pay for Audible, and, you know, every month they give you a credit. So, you know, when a new book comes out and it's $40, great, you get to download it for free. So, I mean, for $15 a month, even if you just download, you know, one book, I mean, you know, you can definitely, you know, cover the cost of the membership. So, in fact, I just started the Game of Thrones a week or so ago, so I'm about 25 hours into
I've never
the first
done that,
book.
But yeah, I do listen to a lot of podcasts. I mean, so yeah, I'm probably throw a book in the car and listen.
Yeah,
to that.
I mean, it's just a great way, you know. I mean, it helps time pass because, you know, even though it's being narrated, you know, it's, you know, some of the narrator's personalities, you know, shine through, and, you know, it's almost like, I don't know, you know, I mean, it's great for the imagination. Up next is Avengers Infinity War, say, you know, the Avengers 4 title, you know, should scare us. And I don't know, you know, exactly. What happens between, you know, Avengers 3 and Avengers 4? You know, I mean, you know, does Avengers 4 just completely reset the MCU?
I've heard rumors that, and they're only rumors at this point, that, you know, and a lot of the people, their contracts are up. I don't, Chris Evans already said that that's going to be his last movie. So, you know, they may end up either doing a hard reboot and starting over with, or, you know, continuing on without, with a different Captain America, because they've done that in the comic books. But I've heard, like, you know, because...
I mean, they don't even want to release the title because they say that, you know, it's going to spoil Infinity War. And it's like...
Agent Shield have been dealing with, like, the blue aliens. But I've heard the Skrull, like, Secret Wars and stuff like that, the Skrull invasion, where, you know, a lot of our heroes got replaced by evil aliens and whatnot, so... That might be the net now that they've cleared up or are working on clearing up the whole Thanos thing, that we may get the Skrull invasion or some other, like, you know, alien invasion type stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just to just see everything reset, like, that just kind of scares the ever living shit out of me. Like, and I mean, you know, I've even heard rumors, you know, I mean, of course,
but I mean,
shit coming out, you know, March 31st, is it a bad April Fool's joke or whatever? But, you know, I've heard rumors that, you know, Tony Stark may be, you know, hanging up the Iron Man suit. So I don't know. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I would much rather see them recast and then instead of like losing these characters completely. Because, I mean, Iron Man is such a part of the MCU that even if, you know, I don't know who would be able to take on that role, but, you know, if they continue this storyline, but we lose a lot of our main Avengers and introduce new characters, I mean, I'm not sure if it's going to have the same appeal.
Yeah, I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark at this point. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know. it just...
Yeah, we will see.
all right, switching gears to, you know, some of the EW or CW and, you know, Flash, Supergirl, basically all DC show comics have been renewed by CW at this point. So I don't think there's necessarily any surprises there. Yeah.
They're still rocking and rolling. Freaking Legends of Tomorrow has been good this season. Constantine's supposed to be a full-time character, I think, continuing on. So they're constantly changing the lineup of that team, but still making it like badass.
Oh yeah, and if you folks have not seen the you know, crossover Supernatural with Scooby-Doo, it is a must.
It's freaking hysterical. Yes. Like, I quit watching Supernatural like 3 years ago because they're in season 13 or 14 now. I just got burned out. But after that, I'm like, I may have to go back and catch up on the last couple of years. I forgot how good that show was until I watched the Scooby-Doo episode.
So, any other news, tidbits, anything that you've got lurking around?
I think that is about it. Check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CigarNerdPod. We're available on iTunes and Stitcher. Go leave us a review. Pick up some energy drinks at StrikeForceEnergy.com. Pick up some shirts at RealMenSmokeCigars.com and our Zazzle store. And with that, remember, all fantasies have some piece of reality. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We are your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.